Assalamu alaikum, peace be with you, and welcome to Islam and Life with me, Tariq Ramadan, broadcasting from London. In today's show, we ask the question, does the act of spying on Muslims infringe human rights?
Following the events of 9/11, British Muslims have come under the spotlight of internal state agencies through spying and recruiting. Young Muslims at schools, universities and mosques are being blackmailed into spying on their own community in an attempt to identify radicals and potential terrorists. Undercover police officers posing as Muslim converts are being used to provoke conversations of jihad in the community, while recording devices are being planted in mosques. Similar revelations have also come to light in the US, where the FBI was accused of spying on American Muslims. This week's Islam and Life asks, does the act of spying on Muslims infringe human rights?
We really have to ask the question, what is happening today within the Muslim communities in the United States, in Britain, but also in other countries, in European countries? It's quite worrying. When we know today, and these are facts, and these are not something that is, these are not only rumors, that communities are infiltrated, that we have undercover police officers or people who are working with intelligence coming within the community, pretending to convert to Islam and getting some information, not only getting information, but sometimes pushing some Muslims to say things, to acknowledge things, or to promote things, and then to use this against them. This is a serious matter when it comes to this war on terror, where the Muslims are targeted, and sometimes now in British jails, but also in the United States, people are in jail without knowing what they have done. It's a preventive or preemptive procedure to put them in a situation where we are suspecting them to be able to do something, so they are potential terrorists. This is happening within the Muslim communities today, and these are critical questions, because at the end of the day, it's against freedom, it's against citizenship, it's against even the real practice of Islam, and pushing people and targeting them in a way which has to do with not respecting their rights as human beings, but also as citizens. We have to ask all these questions. And to answer all these questions, I'm joined by Roshan Muhammad Saleh, a producer and documentary maker. Thank you so much for being with us. This is a very critical situation, because what is happening today is, in the name of this war on terror, in the name of this war against terrorists, what we see in all the Western countries, and of course mainly in the United States and in Britain, is action done by police, by the governments, that are against the basic human rights. So we have to tackle the issue. So I want first to ask you, what is happening? What do we know as the state of affairs when it comes to the Muslim communities in Britain, for example?
Well, I think, first of all, to say that the picture isn't completely clear in Britain yet, because the American model is far more advanced. So if we look at what the Americans are doing, what the FBI have been doing since 9/11, we have a pretty good idea what MI5 is doing, because one security agency often copies another. And what is effectively happening is that they feel that the Muslim community, especially young Muslims, are the most likely to set off bombs on trains, buses, etc., and kill people in this country. So they're targeting all the resources at the Muslim community, and especially young Muslims, in schools and universities, in mosques and communities. They're planting bugs in mosques. They are planting bugs in restaurants. They're looking for information. They don't have access to this community because they're not Muslims, and Muslims can be quite closed in their own ways. So what they need is they need to penetrate these communities, and they often do that through the use of spies. They target leaders because leaders have a big sway over many, many people. They target women because they believe that women are the people, they're more moderate than men for a start, and they bring up they are the people who are bringing up these potential terrorists in their homes. And they target immigrants because immigrants are easy to blackmail. They look for things they can, some leverage they can have on people who will then spy on community members. And they use that leverage to make, to give them information.
So let me ask you a question, because what was said by some people who are expert on terrorism is, in fact, we're trying to get the information. And this is a normal procedure when we want to know what is happening. Some others are saying that they are quite critical, saying, no, in fact, you are not trying to get the information. You sometimes manufacture the whole story.
Exactly.
So I want to ask you, what is the right story? Is it manufactured, or is it a reality they are trying to reach and to get?
I think in a large number of cases, the FBI and MI5 are actually creating terrorists. They're not finding terrorists or catching terrorists. If you look at the conviction rate, a lot of people who are in jail now for terrorism offences are people who are, you know, kind of at the margins of society, the people who really are a bit slow, perhaps dim-witted, perhaps economically disadvantaged. They're not real terrorists in terms of they don't have a bomb, they don't have a plot, they don't have a plan.
It's a heavy word when you say they are creating. What do you mean by
creating? Well, I mean they're literally entrapping people. They are targeting people who they think fit the profile of a terrorist. Young, maybe doesn't like British foreign policy. Then they are aggressively following those people. They are putting ideas into their heads like, would you like to go on jihad to Afghanistan? What do you think about these British soldiers in Iraq? You know, should we go and kill some kuffar? That kind of stuff. Now, these ideas may never have been in these people's heads, but they're actually being put in these people's heads. And then they go to the next step, and the FBI has done this, where they actually set up plots. They supply the bombs. They supply the know-how.
Do we have evidences?
In Britain, we don't have evidence of that. And the FBI, they've done it on numerous occasions. And I think that we will be seeing that kind of stuff happening in Britain as well, because the MI5, you know, follows very closely on what the FBI is doing.
So in fact, the first question would be from outside, why are they creating something which is presented as the, you know, we are the victims of this. The British society is the victim of such a people. So why do they create the
why?
Enemies?
Because terrorism is an industry. It's a big industry which, with a lot of money in it, with a lot of jobs dependent on it. In my opinion, after doing the research, I think the West loves Al-Qaeda. If Al-Qaeda disappeared tomorrow, lots of people will be out of jobs. As simple as that. The security services have to justify their huge budgets. How do they justify it? By catching terrorists. And if the terrorists aren't there, then they'll make the terrorists. You know, for example, if you targeted £2 billion a year at the Eskimo community, trying to find terrorists amongst Eskimos, then you would find terrorists amongst Eskimos. They are creating terrorists. We all know there are a few bad guys out there. They exist, we know they exist. And I think the Muslim community in this country acknowledges that the British state has a right to go after those people. But they're not going after those people. They're going after the whole community. And that is where the problem lies.
But what would you say to someone telling you, you know what, if you push someone to do something, and to tell you can do it, you can, and he goes to it, it means that potentially he would have been able to do it. So there is a danger here. By pushing, you reveal the danger that was potentially here. What would be the answer to this?
Well, I think you can do that with any community. You could do it with the right-wing white extremists. You could do it with terrorists in Northern Ireland. Why the focus on the Muslim community in particular?
So why? Well, this is a good question. Why would you say this?
Well, I mean, I think, as I said before, I think because terrorism is an industry.
No, but why the Muslims?
Why the Muslims? Well, because obviously British foreign policy, there's a history there. British foreign policy has angered many Muslims in the West, and there are some Muslims that have crossed the line into terrorism. But what I'm saying, the key word here is proportionality. And if you overstep the bounds, if you use a hammer to crack a nut, then you are going to potentially have your tactics backfiring. You're going to create more resentment and more terrorists. And I believe that's what's happening.
Okay, so can you tell us more about the way they are doing this? So how do they infiltrate? We heard about stories, for example, in the States. We have some ideas that so how do they operate within the community?
Yes.
The communities, for example, in Britain or in the States.
One of the main tactics they use is the use of converts. I met a family in Manchester whose father was convicted for terrorism for 18 years after two undercover cops came into the community. They asked him questions about Islam. They pretended to convert over a series of months. They frequented his house. They gained the family's trust that way. And when, you know, Muslims are evangelical in their religion. They love it when people convert to Islam and they welcome them into the big family. So when they converted, the trust just exploded. It grew. But obviously they were wearing undercover recording devices. And then they started asking questions about jihad, about British foreign policy. So I would say to people that, you know, if a convert, you know, I mean, obviously I don't want to cast aspersions about all converts.
Yes, of course.
I do not want to do that. Yeah. But if a convert is more interested in politics rather than spirituality, I think that
As a first step,
I think that should set alarm bells ringing in the minds of people in mosques and communities down the land.
So in what you just said, what is against the law? And in which way we can say, okay, look, this is against human rights? Because someone would say, no, it's security. We are trying to get more security for the country. So would you say it's against the law? Would you say it's against the basic human rights?
Well, it's definitely against basic human rights in the sense that it's targeting a whole community. It's not targeting terrorists or people who might fall into terrorism. The net is cast too wide, and the community feels under threat and paranoid and suspicious of each other. In terms of whether it's illegal or not, I mean, the thing to understand is MI5 is not an accountable organization. You cannot make a complaint against MI5 and take on an MI5 agent in an open court. But we know that MI5 agents use very surreptitious tactics, very devious tactics. They move into communities. They marry people. They have sexual relations with people that they're following.
And this we have evidences of that.
We have complete evidence of this. Yes, I mean there was an undercover agent, or he was a very famous man called Bob Lambert. So you might have heard of him. He was a police spy. He worked for MI5, I believe, and he infiltrated the environmental movement. He had sex with women.
But this
in that
was
movement.
Not with the Muslim community.
Because
were told he changed on that.
But later on, he obviously had close relations with several Muslim leaders. So it's an open point. Was he trying to infiltrate the community or not? I have an open mind about that.
Okay, so when you talk about this, okay, you said, oh, it's targeting the whole community. But just before what you said is that they are looking for the people within the community who are potentially attracted by this. So at the end, they would say, no, we are not targeting the whole community. We are targeting the potential terrorists and the potential young people who, at the end, could be attracted by such a rhetoric or such understanding. What would you say on this?
But because who is a potential terrorist? Is it anybody with a beard between the ages of 18 and 30?
Anyone, when you push him or her, who can be attracted and say, yes, yes, I'm going to do
but
it.
But if you push anybody in the world in a particular direction, there is a good chance, if you push hard enough, they are going to go in that direction. So, you know, I don't really think that entrapment techniques, I think it's more about justifying budgets. I don't think these people, if there was no pushing, they wouldn't get to that goal in the first place. So are they really terrorists, or are they just dim-witted, slow individuals who have nothing better to do with their lives, and if left alone to their own devices, would never harm anybody apart from boring a few people with grandiose statements about British foreign policy?
Okay, so this we cannot know, but at one point we have to answer a question. We don't know if, you know, you said, you know, MI5 and FBI are not accountable. They can do whatever they want within the limit of what is accepted. And we know on war and terror.
No, there's no limit. There's no limit. I mean, they are effectively criminal organizations with a license to commit crime. They can do whatever they want. They can do whatever they want. And we know that. If we look at the way security services work around the world, in this country and around the world, they can do whatever they want. And you cannot catch them. You cannot. They've tortured people abroad. They tortured Muslims abroad.
Yes,
they've rendered them,
and there's
no comeback.
Yeah. So for us now, as British citizens, as European citizens, as American citizens, what should be the answer? Would you say, because this is once again, I come back to the same question: are we here dealing with something which is undermining the very essence of the basic human rights for Muslims in the West. Is this what we are witnessing? And if yes, what could be the answer?
Well, I think in terms of the effect it's having on the Muslim community, it is making us suspicious of each other. Yeah. It is making us paranoid. Hmm. And that, in a way, is actually part of the plan.
Because this could be legal.
Because the state... Yes, exactly. Yes, but the state... There's a term for it. It's called psychological warfare. It's
exactly.
Gaslighting.
Yeah. Mm.
Gaslighting is the term for it. In terms of putting ideas into people's heads, making them suspicious and paranoid, it's all part of the divide and rule policy. It's my belief that the British state does not want a strong Muslim community, an organized Muslim community. They want it divided. They want it weak. They want it fighting each other. Mm. In terms of what we can do, if you're... simple things, obviously, we have to organize. We have to know that this is going on. We have to publicize it. We have to say we are not accepting it. Yes, we are against terrorism. Yes, we are against killing innocent civilians. But we're not passive victims going to be picked apart by the British state to justify their foreign policy and to justify huge terrorism budgets. Mm. If we are approached by MI5, we should not have informal conversations with them. If we are approached by counterterrorism officers, we should have a lawyer. We should know our rights. Hmm. And I think it's part of my job now to educate people about their rights and what they should be doing.
So what would be, for example, the first steps when you are dealing with such a suspicious atmosphere? You don't know even who you are talking to within the community. You know that you are monitored as a citizen, claiming that you have rights and knowing that you have rights within the society. What would be the right behavior within this context and this atmosphere?
Well, as I said, I think as a community we need to organize. We need to be unified. We need to have thoughts
but it's a vicious circle. It's a vicious circle because you just said that we are not organized and we are divided. And this is the strategy, is to divide us. So how can we be united when the very essence of the problem is our division?
Well, I think, as a Muslim myself, I've always said that we have to look inwards. We need to look at ourselves in the mirror before blaming others. And I still believe that. Of course, we are citizens of this country, the United Kingdom. We have to obey the law. We have to work with non-Muslims. And we need to work in their institutions as good citizens. But we also have to have our own institutions. That has happened over the last 10 years or 15 years that I've been in this country. But at the same time, I think we are still very divided and that we're still, at each other's throats. We don't have professional institutions. Our management and business ethics are very poor compared to the Jewish community, for example, which is a much smaller community than the Muslim community. So the answer is within ourselves. We need to organize and we need to stop being victims. And we need to stop blaming the other. Because, as long as we are strong and powerful in our institutions and our ideas, then we won't have to play the victim.
So that's okay, and I think that this is a fair point. Now, still we have, and by the way, you are talking about, poor or marginalized or not so much educated Muslims, and what we saw after 7/7 in this country, but also with the profile of the people who might have been involved in many networks, they are in fact educated. They are not, not all of them are marginalized. Some of them were even, PhD students, and then they end up being involved in this. Do we have a responsibility on this area?
Just as Muslims.
As Muslims, because we might deal with the surrounding society, but within this understanding, it's also the potential attraction is still there.
Yes. I think it's very difficult. I think we have to call a spade a spade. It's very difficult. As long as British troops are in Muslim countries, it's very difficult for the Muslim community to clamp down on people who might be attracted to terrorism. And I think if the foreign policy issue is addressed, you take away 90% of the problem. There is a problem of extremism.
You would say 90%.
I would say 80, 90%. Others might have different statistics. Yeah. But a large majority, I would say, of the problem would be taken away. The tension would ease. I mean, even now we're seeing that, the British Muslims are less focused on the West now because of the Arab Spring, for example. So if the focus is taken away, then the focus is off the West and people wanting to blow up trains and buses in the West. But ultimately that we do have a problem with extremism in this country. I think it is being promoted by certain groups. And we have to address that as a community. Mm. And it's very difficult. I think a lot of that extremism is probably being promoted from abroad. Mm. And it has a lot of funding. Mm. And it's prevalent in a lot of institutions in our country. But I think that ultimately those groups will be completely marginalized if the foreign policy element is taken away.
Mm. So, okay, that's an important point. And this was what Tony Blair straight after 7/7 denied by saying that the state of denial, there is no relationship between what happened here and our foreign policy.
Of course it is.
This is what he said. The point is that I want to ask you, if this has to do with human rights, this has to do with citizenship, this has to do with equal citizenship, and at the end it's not a Muslim business, it's something which has to do with us living together. Why is it that we don't see so many people of other faiths involved in this by saying this is, we have some, but not enough?
Involved in what, in terrorism?
Involved in saying it's not acceptable to see the government doing this to some of the citizens and targeting the Muslims. There are some, but not enough. Why?
Well, I think it's because of the media in this country. I mean, I interact with people all the time, non-Muslims all the time, who do feel that Muslims are terrorists. And they would say, you know, basically, of course we're targeting the Muslim community because they're the ones setting off the bombs. Mm. But I think that, you know, we have a very powerful right-wing press in this country, Daily Mail, The Sun, and they are mainly, you know, quite an Islamophobic press. It's a free-for-all when it comes to Muslims. They've stopped being racist, but they've continued, you know, Islamophobia is the new racism. Mm. And I think they are extremely powerful. So I think the mainstream discourse in this country, if it's not outwardly completely Islamophobic, it certainly has Islamophobic overtones. And it's very, very difficult to address that. Most of the Islamophobes in this country, they seem to form their ideas about Islam from Anjum Chowdhury's YouTube videos. Mm. And that is the level of their understanding of Islam. Mm. You know, ultimately, when the BBC and The Sun and the Daily Mail give him a platform, then that is very difficult, this distorted view of Islam that he can put across and others like him can put across, is very difficult to combat.
Mm. Thank you so much. I think that listening to you, it's quite important. And as you said, we need to talk about this. And we need to talk about this today because many Muslims, they don't know exactly what is happening. So what we have, it's clearly a community which is monitored from within, and we have undercover police and people trying to push some of our young Muslims. And what you said also, and we have to be very cautious, not all the converts are like this, but definitely, some of the converts are, some are pretending to convert to Islam in order to enter, and as we are very often emotional about this, we like it, we trust the people, and they might be using this trust against some of the people within the community. And the second point that you made, which is also very important, is to be aware of this, to be informed, and then also as citizens just to organize ourselves. It has to do within the community, because we cannot blame the, you know, the surrounding society. So to look at ourselves. But I would add to something that you said at the end, which is also important, not to isolate ourselves from the surrounding society, because it's important also to have some other voices coming from people of other faiths and intellectuals, journalists that are aware and they don't like what is happening in the country, because they know that at the end of the day, if this is happening to Muslims, this is also undermining the very essence of a democratic society, and this is the essence of the discussion. Well, that's all we have time for. Please let us know your thoughts and views on any of the shows you have seen, and here is the way to contact us.
Islam and Life welcomes your opinion. So please send us your suggestions as well as criticism on any of the shows you have seen or you would like to see. You can do all this by emailing us at islamandlife@presstv.co.uk. You can also be part of our online platform by joining our Facebook page, Islam and Life on Press TV, where you can share your thoughts with other Islam and Life fans, engage with debate and view past shows.
Finally, I would like to thank my guest, Roshan Mohammad Saleh. Thank you so much for being with us and the courage to speak out. And I hope to see you next week, inshallah.